40 days guaranteed. Let me repeat, lose 20 to 40 pounds in 40 days guaranteed. This is not a crazy diet or exercise program. No drugs, hormones, or shots. You can lose 20 to 45 pounds in 40 days with Nutrimost resonant frequency technology to measure 2,800 of your body's key biomarkers. Using NRF, they can find and correct the cause of your weight problem by measuring factors affecting weight gain, including metabolism, fat burning, fat storage, appetite, detoxification, and hormonal regulation. It's safe, fast, easy, and effective, and you won't walk around hungry or have cravings. It's even doctor supervised. Schedule a body composition analysis and consultation. You can be transformed in 40 days guaranteed. This is a limited time offer, so they can't wait to see you look great.
So call 888-718-7077. That's 888-718-7077. Or visit njthin.com. That's njthin.com.
And good morning and welcome to a new edition of Modern Design. We sound a little bit different this morning, and that's for a very good reason. The wonderful Chamber Radio Station has moved to a marvelous new space called the Large House. The Large House is in Flemington, right on Main Street. It's a beautiful historic building which is being renovated, but it's been pretty much fully renovated on the inside. And we've kind of... What? I don't know what's going on there. So we're having some technical difficulties today. Let me see if I can... Oops, that's good. We may have a lot of those today, folks. So, again, we are in these new glamorous studios right on Main Street in Flemington. And with me in studio live, guest today who's been on our show before is Jane DeHaven, a local resident. Good morning, Jane.
Hi, Rich. How are you?
Jane does a little bit of everything. She's a wonderful crafter. She can sew. She can do everything. And she really has vision and often gives me guidance in some of our programs. So I felt that the topic that we're going to do today would be very a good topic for Jane because she's done some wonderful things with fabric, and it's all about fabric. You know, one of the things, Jane, I notice in my career, having done this for 20 years now, is I'll use terms to people and thinking that they know the terms. So I'll say something like damask, or I'll say something like paisley, and sometimes people don't know what a damask means, and they don't know what paisley means. So I went online to do some research for the show, and last night I came up with something that was sort of a dictionary, if you will, of fabric and fabric terms, and it was the 80 most common fabric terms out there. Now, some of them are patterns, and some of them are types of fabric. Some of them I didn't even know what the words were. I'm sure you'll know what all the words were. But I'd like to talk a lot about fabric. So tell me about some of your experience with fabric, because I find that even though I've done this for 20 years, that if I go to a fabric store and I walk in and I see rolls and rolls of beautiful fabric, all of a sudden I am newly inspired to do something. What have been your experiences with fabric and working with fabric?
Well, you know, there's a continuum between delicate and rugged. There's a continuum between formal and casual. It's like the right fabric can make or break a project.
Sure. Now, I know for a fact, from having known you for a long time, that sometimes you've found or inherited pieces of fabric, and you've held on to those pieces of fabric with the intention of working with them. Do you think that's a good idea for people?
Well, it's when you see fabric you like, I say buy it. You may not see it again.
Even if it's something that you don't have an intended purpose for at the time. So if you were looking for a fabric that had navy blue and orange in it, and you saw it and you said it was a good price, you may not have a purpose for it yet, but you could probably use it. So if you can grab it, grab it.
Yeah, if you really love it, then get it. You might not see it again.
Smart. I think that's a great idea. In fact, Jane and I are working on a project together, and I was looking for the perfect red for a project that we were doing for a bedroom, and it had to do with sports colors, and the colors matched. And I didn't even have approval of the homeowner, but I did just that. I was with Jane in Flemington Fabrics. And in fact, Marie, the owner of Flemington Fabrics, is going to be our guest next week when we continue the series of talking all about fabric. I grabbed it and took it. So I figure if I didn't use it there, I'll use it somewhere else. And in fact, I kind of hung it sort of over a rod in my store in between the two panel drapes I had, and it looked great. I was thought I'd maybe have you make it into a window treatment for me. But that's a smart idea. I think that's like anything else. If you're out and you see a black dress that's on sale for $59 with 25% off, maybe you don't have a party that week, but you're going to say, eventually I'll do it. I think the same thing holds true for fabric, don't you think?
I think so, absolutely. I've done that with a black dress.
Have you? So what? And some of these are actually not, some of these are dress fabrics, but we're going to talk a lot about the different fabrics, the names, the types, and because you are a sewer and you've done sewer amongst the other things you do related to decorating, I think you're probably more familiar with what fabrics work well with sewing and with different things. And through my life experience of upholstering things and going through the years, I definitely have some ideas of what would work better. Sometimes clients come to me and they say things like, I want flowy linen drapes with no lining. And I'm like, no, you don't, because they're going to be wrinkled and they're not going to sit well and they're going to look sloppy. And people will say, oh, no, I want that free-flowing, blah, 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 blah. So with a client particular in Hunterdon County, I lined them. And once they were down and they were against the window, not the wall, so you saw the light coming through, she goes, oh, we really needed the lining, didn't we? Yes. And that's a lot of it. I think a lot of it is when you start working with fabrics and feeling them and knowing the differences, it does make you better at what you do, don't you think?
Oh, I think so. And I do think that for drapery panels, you almost always have to line them or they just won't sit right.
Right. A lot of it has to do with weight and just yes. having them. And when you distribute the weight on a fabric properly, they sit well. And don't you think with a window treatment in general, particularly panel drapes, that no matter what you do, even if you steam them before they go up or in place, they're always better looking a couple of weeks later?
I think so, too.
Because I think the fabric fibers relax mm-hmm. and they form their shape. Now, often the length I like on a drapery panel is just touching the floor. I'm not a fan of puddling. I never was a fan of puddling. But I like them just to touch the floor. But know if I install a window treatment or if you buy a panel for your house and you hang it so that it just hits the floor, over time it will grow. Even mm-hmm. a synthetic fiber, just because of gravity, will grow a little bit. So keep that in mind when you hang up a window treatment, particularly a panel that goes to the floor, that it will continue to grow a little bit. It's just the nature of doing window treatments. I do apologize. We're getting a little bit of strange feedback here. It sounds like a electronic door opening and closing. Are you picking that up from the mic, Jake?
I'm not, actually. I mean, again, brand new studios. All the equipment just got moved.
Right.
So
I think we're going to
get through it.
And we're going to have to put some sort of a rug or a sound absorbing because I get yes. a big feedback going on here. But listeners, stay with us. They'll get better each week. So anyway, so I brought up these 80 terms about fabric, and some of them we're going to go through. You don't hear just that? I hear like an electronic door in the background.
Oh, now I just realized yes. why. I can't hear in
out
this
of the side.
Ear.
Okay. Bear with us, people. It's probably not interesting to talk about studio issues. But it is glamorous. And once we get our cameras up, which we will have, it's going to be a little bit longer than I thought, but once we have our cameras up in 2 to 3 months, you'll be seeing us in person, so I better stop eating, Jane. Okay. Having said that, the first term on A, from the A's to Z's of fabric, is argyle. And argyle happens to be a pattern. So how would you describe argyle? I'm looking at, Jane is a plaid person, so I'm always looking to see if she has any argyle on. No, she has plaid on today, plaid skirt, but she doesn't have argyle on. How would you describe argyle?
Well, argyle generally has a diamond shape with an outline. I think everybody is familiar with the term argyle socks, which,
right.
you know, are just iconic.
Right.
So argyle, I could see in many instances. I mean, argyle draperies or argyle valances would be perfect.
Right. Right. So argyle tends to be more of a preppy, a country, or a more traditional style pattern. And argyle is definitely, just to simplify it, it would be like a diamond shape and then sort of a dotted outline of a diamond shape over the top of it, if that helps give a visual. Most often you'll see argyle in men's sweaters, sometimes women's sweaters if they're sort of preppy, socks, as Jane said, and much more of a traditional set. I think argyle could be masculine or feminine, but predominantly would be, I would think, a masculine.
Mm-hmm. It depends on the colors.
Right.
You can do pink argyle.
Right, right, right.
It's traditionally navy blues.
Navy blue, reds, and sort of the gem tone or the jewel tone colors of Argyle. The second one on the list is something that I was not completely sure I knew what was right, and that's the pattern of awning stripes. Now, tell us a little bit about awning stripes. Were you familiar with awning stripes before today?
I am, or I was. Awning stripes, I think, could be a couple of different things, either very thick, you know, maybe, say, 3-inch stripes, or else what you would see for an awning.
Right.
Which is difficult. It's very, very difficult to describe the fabric.
I'm going to try to describe it, and that's why when we get the cameras in here, I can show the fabric, and I'll have samples before the show. But I would describe it as when I was a kid driving down to my uncle had a second house down in Seaside Heights back in the day, and I remember driving down Point Pleasant, and somewhere between Point Pleasant and Lavalette, probably in Lavalette, there was this beautiful old house right on, I guess that's 35 on the strip there. And there was this beautiful old house, and it was clapboard. It was a gray clapboard and white, lots of white trim. And it had a beautiful porch out with rockers that were also gray. And it had an awning, and the awning was a dark green. And that dark green awning had what was called a awning stripe on it. And that was, and you'll probably remember this pattern from years past. It was navy blue, it was hunter green and white, and the stripes were almost, they were wide stripes, but the wide stripes were separated or broken up by a thin stripe in between. They were sort of segmented large stripes, but there wasn't just a simple line down, there was a number of lines on each side defining the stripe. Does that sort of make sense?
That's a really good way to describe it.
Right.
It's hard to picture it without having it in front
of you.
It's a
scene, and we will do that in the future. But an awning stripe is just that. It's the stripe that you would see on a traditional or an older awning. But that combination of the dark green with the gray in a downshort environment with the rockers, it was, even as a kid, I was like, this is strikingly beautiful. And I often look for that pattern today. So that's called an awning stripe. And an awning stripe would be good for a window treatment. It would be great for panels. It would be great for maybe a valance. And you could do a lot of fabrics that have an awning stripe. The next fabric is actually more of a term of the fabric, and that's basket weave. And when I say basket weave to you, what does that conjure up?
Basket weave I tend to think more of as something you'd put on a wall.
Okay.
Almost more on that order.
Okay. I also could see basket weave being used in upholstering a headboard.
Absolutely. I've seen a lot of that lately.
Yeah.
With nail head trim.
With nail head trim, exactly. So basket weave is, according to this online report that I did, it's a pattern of a crisscross in a natural fiber. So it has that linen look, it has that sisal look, it has that natural look. And the basket weave itself refers to the crisscross of the typically a natural fiber. It also did say, though, these days basket weave is so popular and things that look like linen are so popular that they're using synthetic fibers to sort of duplicate it at less of a cost. But you will hear the term basket weave, I think, a lot in referring to fabric. Also, in terms of tiling, if you're tiling your house, there's something called basket weave, and it's tiles that have sort of an intertwining look to them, and they call that a basket weave. It's a type of tiling as well.
Now, would you do that on an entire wall, or is it used for trim mainly, the basket weave tiling?
No, I'm going to show you after this. I would use it in a small area. It's great for if you're creating a 1920s look. It's great for a bathroom like that. If you're doing like a vestibule, if you have an old house, sometimes in old houses, because there wasn't HVAC the way there is today, they had a small front entrance that was separated by doors, and you had that sort of vestibule.
Mm-hmm.
Those often have basket weave in them. Typically, they're white and black, but they can be anything. They're great for small spaces. They're great for bathrooms. But the whole thing of saying somebody, I want a basket weave fabric, it's an intertwined fabric, specifically a natural fiber like jute or some sort of a natural element. The next one on our list was a word that I had never seen before, and I've reached the point, which you're not going to see, that yesterday I went out for the first time and got reading glasses, which I never knew what they were for, but I guess I'm there now. So reading my own handwriting, the The next one is called belting, and I didn't know what belting was. Did you know what belting is?
No.
Belting is when you're doing a window treatment, perhaps maybe some sort of a shade or a valance, and it's that strip of woven material to strengthen fabric. So I would think, it says here to strengthen a strap. So if you have belting, maybe you have a window treatment, or maybe you have a Roman shade, something that's coming down of a window and it's inside mount. And the belting is that loop that goes around. Usually there's two of them on a window treatment. And the belting is the loop that belts or goes around each side to support the weight of the fabric.
Exactly. Now I can picture it. I think Roman shade or even Venetian blinds.
Right. That's the belting
word
I didn't know. But, you know, often I will use these words out to people, and they're like, oh, what's a settee? What's a vestibule? And you have to realize that everybody doesn't have the same frame of reference.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting to say. All right, the next one is batting. Now, Jane, I know you know what batting is.
Batting is used in quilting. It makes for fluffiness in between layers of fabric.
Exactly. It's an insulation or a softening agent. And they describe it here as sheets of wadded cotton used to insulate, often used when doing any sort of upholstering batting. So if you were to do chairs in a dining room and you were going to recover them, often you will replace, because over time it wears out, you'll replace the batting. If you're making a headboard, so many people are trying these days, I think, to make an upholstered headboard. Many of us have more traditional headboards or headboards and footboards, or a lot of us have poster beds and we want to make our beds, maybe not get rid of the poster bed, but maybe try something different, and we take the bed frame, we take it away and put a bed frame up, and then we can do an upholstered headboard. In that case, you'd buy fabric, but you'd buy batting because you need that softness or that insulation factor between the base and then the fabric itself. So mm-hmm. batting is a term that we use, I think you and I use quite often. The next one was one that surprised me. I hear it used all the time. I hear it used in a particular commercial from a furniture company, and that term is called bonded leather. And bonded leather, I did not know what bonded leather was. Obviously, we all know what leather is, but I didn't know what bonded leather was. And do you know anything about bonded leather versus just general leather?
No, until I saw your definition here, I really didn't think much about it.
On the article, that was the thing that surprised me the most. And they describe bonded leather as actually fabric that on the fabric has recycled leather bits. So it's actually an artificial process, and it's not true natural leather. So when people are these furniture companies are advertising genuine bonded leather, it's a partially synthetic product. What they do is they take the scraps when they're doing something with leather, if they're upholstering or you know making a chair, doing whatever they are with the leather, the bits or the leftovers or the recycled pieces are combined with fabric and made to look like leather. That's what bonded leather is.
Interesting.
Yeah, I guess it's the bonding is sort of the fabric, and then those are the remnants that they put together. I don't know if there's a heat process involved in that. So bonded leather is not necessarily the best thing that you can have in a space. You want non-bonded leather.
Well, I was just thinking for wearability, it probably is not as strong as leather.
Exactly. You know, unfortunately, Jane, I found with the change in the economy and the way things are today, people don't always discern quality as much as they used to, especially when it comes to items for the home. I don't know if you see that as well or not, but I do see people in years past, having done this for 20 years, very often, if I was going to do a window treatment, we were using real silk. We're using Doppiani silk, and I was ordering from Scalamandra and beautiful, expensive design houses because the detail, the minutiae of the detail was so important and the quality of the detail. And we were buying real wood furniture and solid wood and discerning. I find 20 years later that people are less concerned about some of the quality and are looking for something that will be very current and very in right now, but that they don't want to necessarily keep till the end of time and pass down to their children. It's something that they want to live with for now that's new and fresh, and in 5 to 6 years may want to do something different. And that makes my career very different. So I don't know if that's something that you see in people, or what do you think about that?
don't know what to say. I mean, the economy is way different than it was 20 years ago.
Right.
So I think people want to try to get, you know, the best that they can given their current circumstances.
Right, right, right. But I do see, I will have to say, because I do deal with the millennials and people getting their first home or townhouse and so on, much less concerned about quality and more concerned about style. And sort of balancing that, using a lot of grays and whites and neutral tones and inexpensive upholstered pieces and pieces that are not necessarily heirloom pieces. I don't even see people buying china closets anymore. If I do a dining table, a dining table and not dining chairs, just upholstered chairs that have multi-purpose. So I do see a difference or a shift. And I do see more of a use of fabric because in earlier days, people had Chippendale, Hepplewhite. They had wood dining chairs. I rarely buy wood dining chairs anymore. There's two things. For the people that are, I think, of our generation or a little bit older, I'll take their set that they bought in the 60s, the 70s, or 80s, and I'll remove the chairs. I'll put the chairs down in the basement. And to make the set look fresher, I will get rid of the china cabinet but keep the sideboard and build that up with a mirror. And then I will replace either just the end chairs or the entire set of chairs with an upholstered chair to make the set look newer and more fresh. So I'm seeing more of a use of fabric than I ever have before. The other thing is, again, upholstered headboards. I'm taking off people's their furniture headboards and replacing them with upholstered headboards. So I see fabric becoming more and more popular with people.
Well, and fabric is just such an easy way to make a big change.
Sure, sure. I think other than paint, fabric is the next best and least expensive way. But fabric can be expensive, but the least expensive way to make a huge change because it's a big impact item. Definitely there. The next word is a word I have never heard before. It's spelled B-O-T-E-C-H.
Botec. Not only have I never heard that word, I have never heard of the definition either.
And it's another word for paisley, and I have never ever...
Oh, this is paisley?
You have bad handwriting.
You have bad... I thought this was pansley. Okay, paisley. Of course I've heard of paisley.
Sorry, folks, but I'm a dude, and dudes do have bad handwriting. Anyway, so... And did this about 4:30 in the morning this morning. But anyway, so Botec or Botec is another word for paisley, a word that I didn't know before.
I don't think it's going to be sweeping the nation.
No, I don't. I don't either. A little snarky there, Jane. Okay. So, but having said that, I love language and I love learning new words. In fact, I'd love to subscribe to something where it's like every day I would learn three new words and be able to use them in my vocabulary. So I find that interesting because I like to throw out new terms.
There is something called Word of the Day.
I've heard of that. How would you get Word of the Day?
I'm not sure, but I'm sure you can find it.
But so I know the word Botec. So next time you have paisley on or there's paisley in your house, I'm going to say, oh, what a wonderful example of Botec. Botec, and I'm probably pronounced that. Wrong. The next one is a word you've heard for a long time, and I know you know this, and that's called brocade.
That is correct.
And what is the definition of brocade?
A raised design woven into silk.
Very nice. So a brocade, I think a brocade lends itself to sort of a more elegant fabric, don't you think?
Yes, exactly. A formal room, a formal living room,
right.
On formal dining room chairs,
right, right,
draperies.
Right, and fine draperies, things that are done on silk with a raised pattern above it. If I think of a brocade, I think either of a sort of a viney, like a floral pattern perhaps for brocade, maybe a paisley for brocade, maybe a damask mm-hmm. for brocade, sort of an elegant type fabric.
Yes.
Would you use a brocade for a woman's, like, for clothing, maybe like for the top of a gown or a dress? Would that be brocade or no, that would be something different?
In the 60s, brocade was huge
right.
for clothing.
When you think of women's dressing in the 60s, I always think of like a top of a woman's outfit being embellished in something like a brocade, but then the bottom being plain. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yes, but I mean, they also had brocade like shift dresses, so... Which you're seeing a lot more of now, similar things like sleeveless,
right?
Just straight shift.
And I think that's going to translate more because the new thing that I see with people is what they call the luxe look, L-U-X-E,
yes.
or the glam look. So even though we're on a period of time where people are simplifying their colors, simplifying a lot of things doing less furniture, being more minimal. At the same time, there's a new trend where people are looking for a little pop or a little spark or a little glamour, and brocade is like that.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe we're taking a room and we're just painting it almost a shade of off-white and keeping everything neutral in the room. But then we're going to introduce some sort of a glamorous factor with something that has a little bit of luxury to mm-hmm. it. And a brocade-type fabric would be a fabric that we could do that. All right, we're going to try to do some commercial messages. I don't know how this is going to go, folks, but we're going to try to do some commercial messages, have Jane have an opportunity to take a breath, and then we'll be back, as well as myself, and then we will get back to you shortly with more of Modern Design right after these commercial messages. Or maybe not.
Home Instead Senior Care. It's our passionate dedication to creating personal relationships between our clients and our caregivers. Visit our website at www.homeinstead.com/325.
Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4-HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
Good morning, Hunterdon. This is Big C coming to you from HunterdonChamberRadio.com at the studio offices of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce in Flemington, New Jersey. Good morning, Hunterdon kicks off your day by providing you with local news, traffic, and weather, as well as light topics through Vitamin C, Wake Up Call, and Chamber Chat. I also have many guests focusing on Hunterdon County community, business, and education. Listen to me every weekday morning from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Good Morning Hunterdon, HunterdonChamberRadio.com.
And we are back with more of Modern Design in our new glamorous dynasty-like studios, don't you think? I felt like
these are great studios.
Oh, my God.
It's a beautiful building.
Jane, describe the building. It's so glamorous. The ceilings are so high. What did you think when you walked in the front entrance? Wasn't it amazing?
It's walking into a mansion. I mean,
yeah.
1840s?
Yeah, 1840s or 50s. And I think we'll talk a little bit about the history because I know you have something interesting, some interesting factors about the building. The house was called the...
It's called the Large House.
And it's called the Large House because wasn't...
That's the name of the family.
It's not because it's a large house.
Yes.
Well,
not
no.
Not because it's a large house.
No, because I thought it was because it was a large house at first. But there was a family in Flemington called the Larges?
Yes.
So what was the factoid that you told me about this house that had some significant history about someone in the past who had stayed here or ate here?
Just recently, I was reading a biography of Charles Lindbergh.
Uh-huh.
And Charles Lindbergh and his wife, too, I believe, had lunch at the Large House during the time of the trial.
The trial. Because the trials were held here in Flemington, weren't
yes.
they? At the court that's still the courthouse today.
Yes.
Isn't that interesting? There's so much history to Flemington, isn't there?
There really is.
Yeah, it is very interesting. So the building on the outside, if you pass the outside, and I don't have actually, we came into studio today, and I didn't take a chance, and I don't have any of the new printed material yet of the building number here. Do you know the building number on Main Street?
I don't.
I describe it as the large house that has it's sort of this beautiful sort of heritage cream, but they're restoring the outside. It would actually look like a building that you wouldn't probably go into from the outside because the inside has been really done quite well and is ready to go. The outside looks like it's a building that isn't ready to go.
Well, I think part of the issue is it's the middle of winter, so
sure.
there's a limited amount of things
they could do outside.
You can do outside.
But the building is on the, if you're coming down Main Street, you'd see it on the, I guess I would consider the right-hand side of the street. And it's sort of like a creamy yellow with big columns and sort of a larger grand-style house. When you come inside, there are elements that are very Victorian, but there's also elements that are very federal at the same time. It's a very elegant-looking building with high ceilings. And then when you come to the left, there's this sort of ballroom that is just absolutely spectacular. Great inlaid hardwood floors. Beautiful. If you look around, Jenny, while I'm looking here. Even our studio now, our studio has a fireplace, a beautiful. Now, I don't know if it's a functional fireplace. There's real wood in there, isn't there, Jane?
There is, but that might be a prop.
Yeah, it might be a prop. But there's a beautiful fireplace with a hearth and beautiful blue and white tile in here. And there's beautiful real leaded windows with real wood windows with big trim around it. And if you look at the doors behind you, Jane, there's beautiful doors with original detail to them. And it really is quite spectacular. One of the issues we'll have to overcome in our new studio is the sound, the echo of sound. We're going to have to do something. In my Flemington store, I share my space with John McLean from Rugs to Riches. So we're going to have to do some sort of either sound absorbing on the floor, or perhaps there's something that I'm working on right now in the restaurant. You know, I'm working on Moe's Bistro in New Providence. We're going to be putting in sound absorbing wall covering. We're going to do these panels on the wall, and they will absorb some of the sound in the space. I think 55 Main did that. The restaurant 55 Main, are you familiar with that, Jonas's restaurant? When he first opened, he had sort of pretty pale blue walls, and then I noticed years later, but every time I ate there, and the food is always exquisite, you really couldn't hear yourself. It was very loud. Mm-hmm. You had the same thing with the hardwood floors and all the hard surfaces. So he redid it, and then I noticed in the back, and he put up fabric panels on the walls, and I noticed the sound was much better, so that absorbs sound, and that makes a big difference. And that's what fabric does. Fabric sort of, when you first move into a new space and it has that hollow feel, once you start adding fabric absorbs sound.
Yes.
It's sort of a barrier, if you will. So our topic today happens to be fabric, the use of fabric, being inspired by fabric terms and shades, things that we're working on, things that make us happy. So Jane did some research herself as well, and she came up with some wonderful things about fabric and her thoughts on fabric, and I'm kind of curious of her perspective.
Well, heavier fabrics are obviously used for heavier duty projects,
right.
For draperies, for upholstery, for example, very substantial cotton or matte lisse, velvet. We have a camelback sofa in our living room, mm-hmm. that we upholstered in matte lisse, and we've got a wing chair in our home office, which we upholstered in velvet. Mm-hmm. Upholstery fabric is graded according to how it wears.
Right.
So how long it'll last, really, before it starts looking threadbare. Mm-hmm. So I didn't pick the velvet for the wing chair because of wear. I mean, it doesn't get that much wear. I picked it because I like the color and the texture. But it turned out to be the same grade of fabric that you would use for a theater seat.
Wow.
So, I mean, obviously, it's designed to handle a lot of wear, and it still looks brand new, even though we got it upholstered more than 5 years ago.
When you're dealing with velvet as a fabric that you going to use for something that people sit on, even if it's something that's not heavily used. See, that's the feedback I'm talking about. You do hear it.
I think that's somebody hammering.
Oh, that's not feedback. That's live going on. We're a grassroots program here, folks. You know what I feel like, Jane? You'll appreciate this. Did you ever watch the Mary Tyler Moore Show?
Of course.
Okay, do you know Ted Baxter, right?
Yes.
You know when Ted Baxter talks about his backstory, how he became a broadcaster? He says the same thing over again. He goes, I started at a 5,000-watt radio station in Fresno, California. Remember he would say that all the time? In fact, I was watching the other night, and Mary said, please don't tell me the story about Fresno. Well, for me, my Fresno is Flemington. I started at a 5,000-watt radio station in Flemington, New Jersey. That's our beginning here with the hammering in the background and no commercials and all that kind of good stuff. But that's a fun story to tell. You know what? And we're going to laugh about this when we're really famous. We're going to laugh about our 5,000-watt radio station in an upstairs bedroom in a mansion in Flemington, New Jersey. And hopefully we're bringing some joy to people or something to laugh at or to sing along to. We'll get through it, folks. Today's kind of a funny day for us. I did come yesterday and did a preview just to see that I would be somewhat prepared, but I'm not prepared. This is a work in progress and a live work in progress. So anyway, so our topic happens to be fabric today, and we're talking about wonderful uses of fabric. I talk about fabric in terms of weight, and often people will come to me and say, because most interior design is driven upon look. And people will say to me, because the fabrics today seem to be so casual and either a lot of pattern or not much pattern at all, just texture, that people want to use light fabrics to reupholster things. And I try to explain to people that there are different weights. And you want to pick a fabric, as you said, Jane, that's upholstery weight. You want to make sure that when you're dealing with a couch, a chair, things that people sit on that are heavily used, that you're using an appropriate weight fabric.
Exactly. And you need the right tool for the job.
Right. And they often describe a fabric's durability by the number of rubs. That's a word that's used often. You have to have a fabric that's appropriate for the intended purpose. So my question to you is about using velvet, which I think is so beautiful. And I do see velvet was very in the 1980s. It was very, very in to do velvet. And then it kind of went out of fashion. But now I see with this sort of luxe glam look, I'm seeing velvet coming back. And people actually asking me for velvet, maybe in non-traditional colors, maybe like charcoal velvet or, you know, a pillow that's like a plum velvet. But because it's luxurious, velvet is very luxurious. So with velvet, doesn't velvet have sort of, there's a word for it, where
it goes...
They call it a nap. Yeah.
And I think that there's different velvets for different applications.
Oh, is
I mean,
there?
Definitely for the wing chair that we did,
sure.
It's a very low nap.
Okay.
I mean, the higher the nap, the more, you know, sitting in it, brushing up against it or whatever, it'll show a
right.
difference in...
And even if it's not worn, I think like a rug... It shows a change in color.
Exactly.
Right?
If you put your hands down a velvet drapery, for example,
right.
it'll show a little bit of a line
right.
where you touch the fabric.
Sometimes I've even seen almost like a whitening effect if you rub the fabric the other direction. And depending upon how saturated the color is, if you do a light gray, you're not really going to see that. But if you do a dark navy, you are going to see that. But that also could be attractive in a way to have that look without it being... a worn look, but to have that sort of...
Well, it's not worn. I mean, it's kind of the way the light hits it.
Right. But it picks up like a lightness when you sometimes go the other way.
A little bit of a sheen.
Right.
Sheen is probably a good word.
Exactly. Not that it's an unattractive thing, but it's something to keep in mind. When people say to me, I want to do something in velvet, I always say to them, keep in mind what velvet will do. That's the same thing is that people love the linen look in it, and they like the look for linen on the walls. And in years past, we don't do faux painting very much anymore on walls. We do it on pieces of furniture now, or we'll do it on cabinetry. But we used to do it a lot on walls. And a treatment we used to do is sort of the linen look. And people often think they like the linen look, but the one thing about the linen look is when you go from panel to panel, which is something that's linen or grass cloth or anything along those lines, there is a, from panel to panel, there's sort of a line or a disconnect in between the panels. And people would set, they would pick it, they'd get a sample, they'd do it, and then we would do the first thing, and then you would see the line going to, which is really what a grass cloth, a true grass cloth or a linen look is. They would be like, oh, I don't like that because it's not consistent.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes we really have to say, okay, let's see an application of this. And before I do anything for anybody, I had a client yesterday in Flemington, and we're going to do sort of a grass cloth in her downstairs bath, which is it's a powder room, but it's a separate water closet, and it's very big. And I said, I'm not just going to give you the big sample. I'm going to order you a sample that we're going to put up so you could see more of the consistency of the pattern. And I think that's very important for people, specifically with fabric, don't you?
Yes, it makes a lot of sense. I mean, a 1-inch by 1-inch, you know...
is not going to give you what it is.
Isn't going to give you the full effect.
And in fabric, I think it's even more important because often if you're doing a window treatments or a sofa, you're using a lot of fabric. So the pattern repeat on something, I think, is critical. And the biggest mistake I've seen people do is they find a fabric that they love... and they don't take account the fabric, the repeat in the fabric.
Yes.
You want to base your fabric that you choose on the size of the piece. So, for example, if you were going to do, I have in my shop, in which you saw the other day, in my shop in Maplewood, I just purchased a new sofa. The sofa is a gray and white tweed, and it's 94 inches long. If I were going to cover that sofa in something different, I would take into account that 94 inches is a very big sofa. So if I were going to do something with that was different, I would want to keep that in mind.
The scale of the whole project.
So by nature, the scale of something that's bigger should be bigger. There's something you wouldn't want to put little calico or pin dots on a sofa that's so big. The same thing holds true for a chair. You have a wing chair or any sort of a chair in your house, or maybe your dining chairs. If you have a substantial chair, you don't want a tiny you don't want a tiny pattern repeat on it. You want something that's appropriate. The same thing holds true for fabrics if you're going to do drapery panels. You may see something that you like, but it repeats. The repeat is so constant. When you're hanging a drapery that's 95 or 96 inches long, which is very long, you're like, oh my God, I hate this fabric. Because when you think about pattern repeat, that could take something that in its essence is beautiful, but the repeat makes it look like a completely different thing.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the biggest of all, well, I would say paint colors wrong is probably the biggest mistake that I see with people. But the second thing I see the most wrong is people do not take pattern repeat into account. Don't you think?
I agree.
Now, everybody has a different take on this. What is your view when you're looking to either make a window treatment or cover something or do something with fabric? What do you look for when you have something to deal with in terms of scale and size and so on, or even color?
You know what? I don't know how to answer that question because I pretty much work from fabric first. I mean, I'll look at the I'll go in with something in mind as far as, you know, the color scheme I'm looking for or what have you.
Right.
But just when I see the fabric, I'll either know it's going to work or I know it won't work.
Right. Well, let's look at the chair. We have a very sort of common looking office chair.
Well, actually, here's a better, I think, example.
Okay.
The two prettier chairs
right.
in the back corner.
Sure.
Those are somewhat similar to the chairs that I have in our living room.
Right.
And those are my mom and dad's chairs that they right. bought when they were first married.
And you reupholstered them.
And, well, they've been reupholstered at least 5 times in their life.
And they're big. How tall would you say they are?
Oh, they're not that big. I mean, they're little. I'm not even sure what the actual technical term for that chair. It's, I think of them as like, they're not quite slipper chairs, but maybe ladies' chairs. They're short. I mean,
right.
what do you think? That's maybe 3 feet off the ground?
I'd say about 3 feet off the ground, but it does have a wide back.
It does, but that's a small print, and
right.
it works for those chairs.
Sure.
So when my mother had said, when they were first married, the fabric that was on them was a very small, like a Fowlerd print,
right.
little circles with dots.
Right.
And in the 70s, my mom got them reupholstered in this big, flashy floral pattern with browns. And
right, very 1970s.
And it didn't work.
No.
I mean, it just was not the right tool for
sure.
the job.
You have to think things through, because something like a very big pattern, let's say today people like a leaf pattern. So let's say we had a contemporary green leaf pattern to put on those chairs. Because the image itself is so big, that leaf will be wrapping around the side
that's
of the
really
chair.
Good point.
So that's the thing about scale. You have to think about it practically. And that's
yes.
why I say before you do any home improvement project, fabric can be very expensive. Your time, if you're having it done out by a workroom, it could be very expensive. Think about that leaf that has to go now around. You have to keep your pattern appropriate to scale.
Yes.
And that helps people a lot. Here's another thing about fabric that I wanted to give with people. I tell people, and it's in style now, but 20 years ago I told this to people, do not have your big ticket items for the most part in patterned fabrics. The biggest example of this is your sofa.
Mm-hmm.
I do not recommend buying or covering a sofa in a fabric that's patterned. Let the sofa be a solid neutral, whether it be chenille, whether it be leather, whatever the surfaces of the sofa, contemporary, traditional, transitional, have that be a solid fabric, and then use pillows to change your accents, because that will give you a life with those things. When you commit, as they did in the 1980s, and even I think up until 1995, 96.
The big splashy florals.
Right,
you're
right.
living with that for a lot
even,
of years.
Even paisley, even plaid. If you were to do a gray sofa or a navy sofa with two gorgeous navy plaid pillows, you could still use it. If the sofa was plaid, maybe not so much. So keep your big ticket items neutral, and that allows you to bring in a throw. It allows you to bring in pillows. It allows you to bring in accessories, and it extends the life of your furniture.
Mm-hmm.
Take smaller pieces of furniture, like maybe a place where you'd want to do a lot of pattern is if you have dining room chairs, and the chairs are wood, and you want to do your seat covers. because people will stain. So I don't ever recommend white as a chair cover. Do something that has a lot of color in it. It's the same thing that holds true for dining room rugs. If I'm doing two rugs for somebody, one in a living room and one in a dining room, I say make your living room rug, if you want more of a neutral look, have that be more neutral. Have your dining room rug be patterned, because it does hide
That's
stains.
That's a good point, absolutely.
Those are the little things you learn about through time and through Thanksgiving and through those types of things with other people who, you know, Uncle Joe stained the rug, is to be practical as well as beautiful. So keeping fabrics to scale is very important. Using fabrics that are appropriate for their job, so using an upholstery weight fabric as using to one that would be drapery weight as opposed to a fabric for dresses. It's very important to do the right scale of fabric in a space. And fabric is very, what Jane said, it's transformative, isn't it?
Yes.
A fabric could take a space and just change things like you wouldn't believe. Now, Jane also is a wonderful sewer and has done some sewing for herself and for me. When you're making window treatments or you're recovering things or doing stuff, what do you like? What do you enjoy? If you said, oh, I love making valances, or you said, I'd love to make a pillow, what are the things when you let's say you go to the fabrics or you go to Flemington Fabrics and you find that there's a, and she's very good, Marie's very good about having partial bolts of things, and you can get a great deal there on fabric she already has that she doesn't have to order. You can get, if you find them. Jane and I found a sort of an apple green geometric. Now someone's going to take it. I better not tell that world. I'm going to go get it. I'm out the door in a few minutes, folks. I'm getting the fabric. Jane and I found collectively, we were there the other day, and we found an apple green and white geometric fabric. Wasn't it gorgeous, Jane?
It was, and I love the fact that it was reversible. You could have used either side.
Right. And it was just a beautiful fabric. So you can go and find a discount fabric and say, you know what? I'm going to make pillows for my sofa in this. And really change things with something as little as an $8, $9, or $10 purchase. And if you're able to do those things, you can really transform a space without replacing all of your furniture.
Well, one of my other favorite tricks is using, using tablecloths to make valances. I mean, it's designed for stuff to be spilled on,
right.
And it's designed to be thrown in the wash and taken out, and very little problem. So,
you know,
and they're inexpensive. You can go to Marshall's Home Goods and get a tablecloth for $7 or $10.
Right, and there's so much to that. You and I talked about that last week. Using tablecloths as fabric is wonderful because they are treated. They are meant to be durable and spilled on, so you know you're going to get a fabric that's going to be very durable for you. And you could never buy fabric by the yard for as cheap as you can buy fabric as a tablecloth. So that's a very good topic. Believe it or not, Jane, with all our disruptions, and I think I hear sanding now, with all our disruptions, and I'm not exactly sure how to end the show because we have all new rules today, we have come to the end of our show.
It went fast. We started late.
We did. We got to cheat
all
today. We started late.
So
that means you owe me. I have to get you back again for a partial of another show then, or a call, maybe a call in. But anyway, folks, thank you. We're going to do a lot of things different. In as I told you, modern design is really changing this year. We're going to be adding the YouTube channel shortly. We're having a television camera here. You're going to be able to see us. And I'm also looking for new talent. If you have something that you do that's artistic and you want to display it here on Modern Design, give me a call. My phone number is 908-884-0770. We are going to feature a lot of the downtown Flemington businesses that are related to design. We have a wonderful schedule. We're going to be doing a lot of fun projects. We're going to be doing some remotes in 2017. And give me a call. We're going to open phone lines shortly once we have our new board set up. And a lot of interaction with the public. So I thank you for supporting. This is our third year of Modern Design. I thank you for supporting us, and only good things ahead. So I bid you adieu, and we'll see you next week in studio, next Wednesday here. Thank you, folks, and have a wonderful day.